Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up and cheer for the Copa America Centenario, the biggest international football tournament to be held here in the United States since the 1994 World Cup, officially kicks off later Friday night in the northwestern city of Santa Clara, California. The USA will host Colombia at Levi's Stadium in the opening match of the 16 Nation Football Festival. This marks the first time the Copa America has been held outside South America. To celebrate the competition's 100th anniversary and to make a lot of money off ticket sales, rights fees, and sponsorships, organizers decided to bring the tournament here to the United States. Copa America Centenario will feature some of the world's best players and teams. World football's governing body, FIFA, released its rankings for June on Thursday. Five of FIFA's top nine teams will show off their talents at Copa America. World number one, Argentina. World number three, Colombia. World number five, Chile. World number seven, Brazil. And world number nine, Uruguay. For more on the Copa America Centenario and Friday night's USA versus Colombia opener, let's go to Santa Clara, where VOA Spanish branch reporter Hesel Tobias is standing by. Hola, Hesel, and welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Thank you for having me.
Hesel, what kind of atmosphere do you expect at Levi's Stadium on Friday evening?
Oh, I expect this to be a huge party. I want to see Colombians everywhere, American people everywhere around the stadium, cheering and supporting their team. There are pretty much a full, they have sold pretty much the stadium already. It's the capacity of the stadium, it's almost 70,000 people. And FIFA said yesterday during a press conference at night that there are just 1,000 more tickets available. So that means we're going to have a packed stadium tonight.
Hesel, if I look at the FIFA rankings, it seems like kind of a mismatch. Colombia ranked number three in the world against the United States ranked number 31. Do you think the Americans can give the Colombians a match?
Definitely that's going to happen, especially because they're local here. I mean, they're in California. This is their land. So I'm sure we're going to watch a beautiful game tonight. But Klinsmann said in a press conference last night here in the Levi Stadium that they don't feel the pressure of playing as locals because the historical teams, the big ones, have the responsibility of winning. And that's what he want to do tonight, I guess, because he's mixing. He has a mixed team between experienced players and this new generation of players. So I guess Klinsmann and his team, they just want to have fun and enjoy the Copa America here in America.
Hesel, Coach Klinsmann has also said that anything less than a top four finish at the Copa will be a disappointment. Do you see the Americans reaching the semifinals?
Definitely, I do. I mean, the South American teams are not in a good shape right now. Argentina is not doing that well. Messi, we don't know if we're going to see him playing. Colombia is also mixing and testing a new team. So I guess the U.S. has a big opportunity to do well during this tournament.
Hesel, you mentioned Lionel Messi. He's been involved in a tax evasion trial this week in Spain. Do you see that affecting his performance? Should he make it to the States?
We have seen him being affected by this before in previous occasions, in similar occasions like this. So it's possible. It looks like these kind of things definitely get in his mind. So it's probably that could affect his game again.
Lionel Messi, maybe the biggest name at the Copa America. Hassel, what about James Rodriguez for Colombia? Do you see him being a big star at the Copa?
And he wants to be, Sonny, because where he plays for Real Madrid. He's been a side of the team lately. He's not been playing. So he want to show off in this Copa America and say, here I am, I'm one of the stars, and I need a chance in the Real Madrid.
Hassel, as you talk to the fans around Levi's Stadium, do you get the sense that they're aware of how big this tournament is, the significance of the tournament being played in the United States for the first time?
Not really, Sonny. I was reading the newspaper this morning, and they didn't pay much attention to this tournament, which surprised me. But, I mean, here we are. This is a huge tournament. Soccer is increasing in America. So hopefully during the tournament, after the tournament begins, people start feeling the atmosphere and just start going with the flow.
Hassel, we've mentioned some of the big names, James Rodriguez, Lionel Messi, Clint Dempsey will be playing for the United States. Who are some of the other big stars that will be on display at the Copa America Centenario?
Well, we're going to have, hopefully, we have Suarez from Uruguay playing. He's also a little bit injured, so hopefully he can recover and we can see him playing. And we're definitely going to miss Neymar, who's not going to be playing during this tournament because he's going to play the Olympics for Brazil. And Keylor Navas is another player that we're going to be missing. He's the goalie from the Real Madrid and the goalie for Costa Rica. He's also injured, so we're not going to see him play. But we're going to have many more stars from those 16 countries that are here in America.
Finally, Hassel, do you see this tournament, this historic tournament, the Copa America Centenario, being kind of a building block towards the World Cup in Russia in 2018?
Definitely. That's definitely sure, because the coaches from all those teams wanted to see where they are right now. They want to try new players. They want to see their wrongs and their goods. So that way they're going to pretty much get ready for the next season. And I mean, the World Cup in Russia is close. We see it like far right now, but no, 2 years definitely go past flying. So they're going to take this tournament serious because they want to see where they are standing right now.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Hassel Tobias speaking with us from Santa Clara, California. Hassel, thank you for chatting with us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thank you for having me, Sonny.
Hassel Tobias is looking forward to the Copa America Centenario, and so is veteran American referee Mark Geiger. The 41-year-old Geiger will be officiating at the Copa America after blowing his whistle at some of the world's biggest international tournaments, including the 2014 World Cup in Brazil and the 2012 Olympics in London. VOA sports reporter Ben Cento reached Geiger in Chicago, one of 10 venues for the Copa America Centenario, and asked him, how did you get your start as a referee?
I started refereeing when I was 13 years old. My parents encouraged me to get a job, and I was already a player at that time, and this is one way to earn some money and stay involved in the sport.
What's the atmosphere like at a major international tournament?
My goodness, it's incredibly stressful. It's crazy and exciting all at once. You know, especially a tournament like this, the stadiums are going to be packed with people, you know, cheering and loud and encouraging their teams to do well. And there's going to be a lot of stress on the referees and a lot of stress on the players, you know, to perform well, both for the players and the referees, and to make sure that we're getting our decisions correct on the field.
So in a football match, there's a possibility of having to give a player a yellow card or a red card. Being under the spotlight as a Copa America referee, is there any extra pressure in doing that?
Well, there's pressure anytime we're making a decision that can change the outcome of the game. You know, anytime we're calling a penalty, giving a red card, you know, where a player has to play down, or a penalty where it's almost an assured goal. You know, so there's always that extra pressure. You know, but we're doing so much training every single day. You know, we're at our seminar now, you know, going through the laws of the game and going through different scenarios to make sure that there's uniformity and consistency. And so if we trust in our training, you know, and go with what we see on the field, then hopefully we're making the right decision out there.
Football is almost like a religion in many countries. The crowd can sometimes get a little out of hand. Do you or any of your referee colleagues ever express concern or even fear with that?
I don't know about a fear. A lot of us, the more energy there is in a crowd, the more energy that translates onto the field for the players and for the referees. So when it's exciting and loud and the people are booing or they're cheering on their team, it gives you a little bit of boost while you're out there on the field.
Is there any difference in intensity between international matches or any league matches you might have officiated?
I think it depends on the game itself. There are going to be some international matches that may be a little bit low-key or straightforward, and then you have your rivalries, just like you do in the domestic leagues. You know, you have the same rivalries year after year, and you have the same thing internationally as well.
How does the Copa America differ from the World Cup in terms of your preparation?
I think preparation is exactly the same. We're seeing a lot of the same teams in Copa America that we have in the World Cup. You know, we have some of the best teams in the world. You know, when you look at the top 20 teams in the world, you know, many of them are coming from North America and South America. The others are a lot coming from Europe as well. So when you have a tournament like this, where the concentration of talent is very high, you know, we have to take it very seriously. We have to go into every match prepared, you know, just as we did in the World Cup.
This marks the first Copa America to use goal line technology. What do you think of it?
What do I think of it? It's big. You know, I mean, we have so many games that are decided by one goal, you know, or really they may be tied, you know, or one goal in a game could change everything. So I think anything that will help us get those goal line decisions correct is fantastic. You know, we could be in the right position for the play 1 second earlier, and then there's a shot that's taken, and there's no way physically that we can get on the goal line to make the right decision. So the help that we get from that goal line technology is certainly beneficial. Even if we only use it one time in the entire tournament, I think in the end it's worth it.
This Copa America is going to be broadcast all over the world with a huge audience. What's your attitude going onto a stage with so many eyes on you being the referee?
I think you have to drown that out, you know, and focus on the players that you have on the field. If you start worrying about the millions of people that are watching you, you know, that starts to play with your head a little bit. You know, so again, you trust in your training, you go out there, you be preventative with the players, you're communicating with the players, and getting through as best you can.
In a tournament like this, when a player, possibly like Lionel Messi, arguably the best player in the world, steps onto the field, are you aware of something like that, or do you look at players just one in the same?
No, I mean, when you go into a game, you know the players that you have out there. You know the team tendencies, and you know individual player tendencies. When you have a player like Messi, or each team has their star players, you know, you're aware who the targets are going to be, both for their team and who the defense is going to target as well. So that's something that we prepare for going into each match. But the thing we need to remember also is that every player is going to have a moment of brilliance at some point during the game or some point during the tournament. So we can't focus all of our energy on a Messi or a Suarez or Neymar. You know, we have to focus on all the players on the field.
That's veteran American referee Mark Geiger, who will be officiating matches at the Copa America Centenario here in the United States. And Geiger was talking with VOA sports reporter Ben Cento from Chicago, Illinois.
The Voice of America. VOA. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association Finals tipped off Thursday night in Oakland, California, where the Golden State Warriors defeated the visiting Cleveland Cavaliers 104-89. Now, the reigning champion Warriors can usually rely on plenty of scoring from their dynamic backcourt of Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, nicknamed the Splash Brothers. But the Splash Brothers didn't make much of a splash in Game 1 of the Best of 7 Championship Series, a rematch of the 2015 NBA Finals. Curry had 11 points and Thompson 9 points, and they shot poorly, missing 19 of the 27 shots they took from the field. But Golden State's reserve players picked up the slack. Point guard Sean Livingston came off the bench and scored a team-high 20 points. Talk to us about your performance, Sean.
Just adjustments. I think I took the same shots last series, but it's just staying confident in my shot, understanding my game, where the shots are going to come from, and trusting it.
Sean Livingston and the Warriors have a lot of trust in Steph Curry, their two-time league most valuable player. But this was a rare subpar night for Steph. So says Golden State's head coach, Steve Kerr.
You know, Steph just had one of those nights, just wasn't going in, and he had some turnovers. So it happens. You know, even the best players in the world have bad nights. But it didn't hurt us because of our bench and our overall defensive effort and taking care of the ball.
In terms of taking care of the ball, superstar LeBron James had 4 turnovers for the Cavaliers. But LeBron played very well overall, tallying 23 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists. LeBron says Cleveland will make some changes ahead of Game 2 Sunday night in Oakland.
We will have a better game plan going into Game 2, for sure, offensively. And, you know, sometimes your offense dictates your defense, you know. And, you know, the fact that we had 17 turnovers and it led to 25 points is not a good ingredient for our offense, for sure.
Cleveland Cavaliers basketball star LeBron James speaking in Oakland, California. Once again, Game 2 in the NBA Finals will be Sunday night in Oakland. The defending champion Golden State Warriors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 104-89 in Game 1 Thursday night. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Happy Friday and sporty greetings, Andrew.
Happy Friday and sporty greetings to you, Sunny, as well.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Friday?
Oh, Mr. Livingston, I presume, is trending. Yes, he is. Sean Livingston.
We heard from him, yes.
Yes. So as I predicted yesterday, I said, you know, there's going to be one player. It may not be Steph Curry, but there's going to be one player that everybody's kind of talking about. And sure enough, it's Sean Livingston scoring 20 points off the bench for Golden State, especially after Curry and Klay Thompson had kind of a weak night to go and come off the bench and score as well as he did. They said actually he scored better than any Cavaliers player. He scored out of either side, scored the most points. So a lot of chatting about him, saying if he can keep this up, maybe he'll be the MVP of the finals. We'll see if he can maintain this level of play, but a lot of, as we always see after these games, a lot of back and forth and kind of and armchair analysis, as we like to say, from folks.
Postmortems, I
yes,
guess.
Yes, postmortems. But the Cleveland fans are saying, well, it's not a postmortem yet, so we still got a long series to play. And they pointed out, actually, that LeBron's teams are 1-5 going into last night in first games of the NBA Finals. So now they're 1-6 going in the first game. So saying, yeah, maybe we'll start slow, but you know what? We can come back and fight and potentially win.
It's interesting you bring up Sean Livingston as a possible maybe series most valuable player. It's a little early, just one game. But last year, in fact, Andre Iguodala was named the MVP of the 2015 NBA Finals. He's not what you would say one of Golden State's big star players. More of a role player, in fact, and yet he was named the most valuable player.
Yeah, so it could easily happen for any of these players off the bench. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned Andre Iguodala, because he was the subject of a little bit of a social media back and forth and some teasing, because Matthew Dellavedova was trying to reach around him for the basketball and hit him in an area that is not
ooh, I'm wincing.
Not an area you want to get hit in, let's just say
I'm wincing, Andrew.
Yes, so below the belt, we'll say. But so there was a lot of jokes at his expense getting hit below the belt during that fracas. But then they said that Golden State went on a run after that, so they said, oh, maybe it was a good thing for them that he got hit. But yeah, so lots of talking, lots of back and forth between the teams, as we're going to see for the next, you know, week and a half or so, or maybe even 2 weeks if the series continues that long.
What's your sense at this point? I know it's just been one game, Andrew. Do you see the series going 6 or 7 games?
I think so. I think these are two teams that are well matched up. I think we could see a little bit of what we saw in the Eastern Conference Finals, where the team with home advantage would go out and win kind of in a blowout. I mean, Golden State on their home court won by 15 points last night. When they go into Cleveland, I think Cleveland could run up the numbers. So I think we're going to see some of that back and forth.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And I tweeted out Hassel Tobias earlier today. We heard from Hassel in Santa Clara, California, the venue for Friday night's USA-Colombia match. So check out that tweet. I gave Hassel's handle. And tell Hassel what you think about the Copa America and this big tournament coming up here in the United States. What about the Copa, Andrew? Is that trending in the sports world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be trending a lot more as we go into tonight and as the matches begin in California. But all through the next week, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of that. And what we're seeing right now, actually, is another kind of match, a tennis match that's been trending all through today. The men's and women's finals at the French Open are set now. The women are going to play in the final tomorrow. The men will play on Sunday. It'll be Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic, the number one, number two men in the world on the men's side. And in, for the women, we have Serena Williams, the number one, and Garbine Muguruza of Spain. It's spelled with a Z. I always like that. They say Muguruza because it's kind of got that lisp, that the Barcelona lisp kind of thing they do. But for the both of these number ones, for Djokovic and for Serena Williams, there's a lot on the line. For Djokovic, if he wins this French Open, he'll complete the career Grand Slam. He's won the Australian several times. He's won Wimbledon. He's won the U.S. Open. He's never won the French. So this is his chance to get that career Grand Slam. For Serena, if she wins this, it'll be her 22nd Grand Slam win. She will tie Steffi Graf for the overall record, man or woman, overall record. She'll be tied if she wins tomorrow. Now, it's going to be a challenge, I think, for both of them. On the men's side, Andy Murray just beat Novak Djokovic at one of the tune-up clay events, the Rome Open. He beat him pretty handily, 6-3, 6-3 there. And for Serena, Garbine Muguruza, they have an interesting kind of history. They've played 4 times, and every single time has been in a Grand Slam event. In fact, back in the 2014 French Open, Muguruza beat Serena in the second round. It was a shocking upset. She was unranked at the time, Muguruza, and she's since risen to be number 4 in the world. And then in Wimbledon 2015, it was actually in the finals. It's a rematch of the finals. She and Serena faced off in those finals. Serena beat her 6-4, 6-4. So I think it's going to be a good matchup. But all through the morning, we've been seeing these names pop up. I saw that Stan Wawrinka's name was trending. He, of course, was the defending champion in the French Open, lost today to Andy Murray in the semifinals. We're seeing all these different names. Kiki Bertens is another one. She's from the Netherlands.
Okay.
She had to qualify to get into the tournament. And she all she wanted to do was win 3 matches, because if she won 3 matches, the Netherlands, where she's from, they said, well, we'll put you in for the Olympic team. So actually, she was crying on the court after her 3rd match win, just because she knew she would get into the Olympics. So people have been following her on social media, saying what an inspirational story that is, that she not only qualified for the Olympics, she went on to win a couple more matches after that and go to the semifinals to play against Serena Williams. And so Serena Williams beat her, but it was a very close match, especially in the first set, went to a tiebreak. So a lot of these inspirational stories that we're seeing, and just thank, you know, a lot of thankfulness that the rain finally stopped and they were able to get the tennis in. Of course, as I mentioned, there was a tweet that somebody sent out where they replaced the center court, Philippe Chatrier, with an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And they said, this is actually going to be, because there's been so much rain. So people are just glad that tennis is happening, and it'll be trending all throughout the weekend for sure.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, and have a good weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend. And that wraps up the June 3rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a great weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sub-Saharan Africa has done well over the past few years. The overall trends in Sub-Saharan Africa point to accelerated democratization, development, and economic opportunity, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield recently before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. A number of countries have ended long-running conflicts and are rebuilding. Others have held successful elections in the past year. Economic opportunities are improving, and per capita income has been increasing steadily. However, in spite of these positive trends, instability and conflict continue to bedevil parts of the continent. And much of that is due to terrorism and violent extremism. Terrorist organizations such as Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM, and Al-Murabitun are exploiting state fragility and political and economic vulnerabilities, said Assistant Secretary Thomas Greenfield. We see violent extremists focusing their recruitment efforts where there is a lack of economic opportunity, political and social alienation, poor governance, corruption of elites, and lack of accountability for abuses by security forces. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In East Africa, Al-Shabaab has launched large-scale attacks against the African Union's forward operating bases and other targets throughout Somalia and Kenya. And ISIL is attempting to co-opt local insurgencies and conflicts to expand its networks. The United States is working with individual countries and transnational organizations in Africa to boost their military capabilities and to strengthen law enforcement, judicial, and other criminal justice sector institutions. At the same time, we are working to stop the recruitment, radicalization, and mobilization of people to engage in terrorist activities. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses. We are working closely with government partners at both the national and subnational level to adopt more effective policies to prevent the spread of violent extremism, said Assistant Secretary of State Thomas Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.